Soldiers of the Press. Whenever new battlefronts are opened, you'll find the shock troops of news, the war reporters, moving up with our armed forces. For theirs is the difficult and dangerous task of keeping the home front informed of developments on the far-flung fighting lines. When American and British forces swarmed ashore in North Africa, 7 United Press correspondents rode with the Rangers and commandos in the landing barges or watched the action from the bridges and gun decks of warships screening the landings. This is the story of one of those men, Ned Russell of United Press.
You've never heard of Stuka Acres, I'm sure. And I know for a certainty you won't find it on any map. Yet in more than 3 years covering war, the events of 72 hours at Stuka Acres have left a deeper and more lasting impression on my mind than any other experience of my life. Stuka Acres is, or I should say was, a small Tunisian farm near the equally insignificant village of Tuburba. The name was given it by those of us who went through 3 days of incessant bombing and strafing by German dive bombers at that Allied advance post. But perhaps I'd better begin by telling you how I came to go to Tuburba in the first place. Well, I was one of a group of United Press correspondents sent out from London to cover what turned out to be the opening of a second front. I first set foot on North African soil in the half-light of a chilly dawn, with a small party of American Rangers who'd been detailed to take a strategic airfield at Blida, 30 miles southwest of Algiers. As we splashed ashore, a British lieutenant colonel with our task force commanded sharply,
"Deploy and take cover in the dunes, men. Be alert for a signal. Henderson.
Yes, sir.
Smith.
Yes, sir.
Lachlan.
Yes, sir.
Hart, you'll move forward with me.
May I accompany you, sir?
Can't make you out in the dark. Who is it?
Russell. Ned Russell.
Oh, of course, Russell. Yes, come along. But keep down, all of you. Now then, forward.
Okay. Oh, hey, you behind, watch out for that hole in the beach.
Hey, flatten out.
What was that?
It may be our signal. Listen.
That was V. Yeah, V for victory.
All right. Who goes there?
Ben, friend of the American and British comrades.
Advance, friend. Give the password.
Cousin, 10-2-7.
Cousin, 7-2-10.
At least you can. It has been a long night in the dunes and a cold one. But everything is in readiness for you. All French commanders have been instructed to facilitate the debarkation and establishment ashore of your American troops. Permit me to introduce myself. I am Captain Pierre Maron.
The landing was as simple as that. Within 20 minutes after we waded ashore, dripping wet from the surf, the fort at Sidi Farouk had capitulated. Half an hour later, the Blida airport fell into our hands without a shot being fired. 2 hours later, the bugler at Fort L'Empereur, at the western gateway of Algiers, sounded the cease-fire call, ending resistance there. So we pushed eastward. There was some fighting, of course, spotted but fierce at times. Still, the overall effect was somehow reminiscent of a comic opera. LBR, one of the suburbs of Algiers, will illustrate what I mean. We encountered limited French resistance there. Snipers who withdrew through the town firing from houses, they went. Our troops moved in, dodging from tree to lamppost in approved cops and robbers fashion, and whamming away at the enemy with their garrons. The natives were delighted. They watched from their doorways, and at every lull, someone would poke his head through the door of the local cafe and invite us to have a glass of wine. Results were being achieved, and rapidly. Make no mistake about that. Lieutenant General Clark and his corps of advance agents had done a thorough and effective job of laying the groundwork for the arrival of the Allied forces. But war with intermissions for Vin Rouge was hardly what I'd been counting on. Two other American press representatives who had landed with our troops at Algiers were equally restless. A few days later, the three of us were having a drink in a small cafe in eastern Algeria. We were grousing about the lack of action when a mechanized force rolled through the streets.
Hey, look!
The Yanks are coming.
Yeah, Bill. They say the Germans are getting set to make a stand at the Tunisian border.
Well, what do you say, fellas? Let's see if we can't thumb our way up front with this outfit. I'd like to think I'd filed one good story this week.
Wait a minute. Wait. Opportunity knocks.
Uh-huh.
One of the command cars has stopped. An officer is coming in.
Hello, Captain. Won't you join us?
Oh, hello. The press, eh?
That's right.
What are you fellas doing here? Don't you know there's a war on?
No.
There's an ugly rumor to that.
Well, that's what we'd like to talk to you about. Won't you sit down? Oh, waiter. Vin rouge pour le capitaine.
Oh, thanks. One gets pretty dry herding a flock of tanks and half tracks through this dust.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, here's health.
Right. The USA.
And now, what's on your mind?
You're headed toward the Tunisian border, aren't you?
Yes, that's right.
What are the chances of getting to see some action up that way?
From what I hear, they're good. That's why we're going up. Reinforcements. The Germans are said to have a sizable force somewhere east of the village of Tabuba.
Well, how about hitching a ride with your outfit? If there's going to be a show, we'd like to be in on it.
Yeah, how about it?
Can you manage it?
Let's see now. Well, if you don't mind a bit of crowding and don't insist upon air conditioning, I think I can pack you into the rear of our command car.
Okay, great. That's me.
Well, let's be going.
Sure thing. Oh, by the way, I think we'd better introduce ourselves. I'm Ned Russell of the United Press.
Glad to know you, Russell.
How do you do, sir? This is William Stoneman of the Chicago News.
Hello, Stoneman.
And this is...
I'm Captain T.R.
That's how three members of the American Press Corps happened to wind up at Stuka Acres, where we almost ended our journalistic careers.
Russell and his companions moved on up to a small farm which served as battalion headquarters. They set up shop in a mud hut that formerly belonged to an Arab farmhand. Before the first night fell, the Germans made three bombing attacks on American and British positions less than a mile away. The following day, the Germans increased their pressure. German mortars moved into position to shell the valley in front of the farm. Waves of bombers came over endlessly. In 1 2-hour period, they counted five separate aerial attacks. Stukas, Junker 88s, and Messerschmitts, which zoomed down to strafe allied positions from a height of only a few feet. The very earth heaved from nearby bomb hits until Stuka Acres became a roaring, rocking hell. British and American guns from the ridges close by added to the din.
Our second night at Stuka Acres, I tried to transcribe my notes on my portable typewriter, but I found that I was half deaf from the concussion of the bombs. My teeth ached from shock. My nerves were jumpy. So I gave up and crawled into a corner to try to catch a few winks of sleep. Just before dawn, I was awakened by the sound of bombs and artillery, which were churning up a plowed field a few hundred yards to the south. I made a dash for headquarters.
Oh, hello, Ned.
Hello, Bill.
Say, did our neighbors disturb your nap? I'll speak to them about it.
Say, what's up? This sounds worse than what we went through yesterday.
I'm afraid it is, Russell. Our advance patrol reports that the Germans are moving up with three companies of infantry and two tank columns.
And the tanks are executing a pincers movement.
Hey, Russell, here. Have a look through this window.
Okay.
See that ridge a mile across there?
Yeah, I see it.
Well, use your glasses.
Okay.
Now then, see those dark objects silhouetted against the east?
Oh, yeah.
Well, brother, those are German tanks.
Hey, they're too close for comfort.
You're right. And you needn't look now, but there are more of them north of us. And there are snipers and machine gun emplacements to the south.
To make the situation even stickier, German tanks and machine guns are laying down their fire to the rear, between us and the British artillery emplacements to the west.
Well, sir, what do we do?
Our tanks are moving up to attempt to push the German line back. They have excellent support from the British artillery to the rear. We'll stick, of course. Hope for reinforcements. But unless they arrive today, hard to say what may happen.
We stuck through another day of hell. The Stukas pounded us unmercifully. Shells screamed overhead. The rattle of machine gun fire and snipers' bullets filled every lull in the bombings. Fragments from high explosive bombs stripped the trees at Stuka Acres of all foliage. Our tanks turned back under the superior fire from enemy artillery. And I spent most of that day of terror huddled in a trench with Stoneman. When we dared to look up, we could see the bombs disgorging from their racks. Once we saw two hurtling straight toward us, we thought our numbers were up. We could hear bomb fragments whining just above our heads. At 9 o'clock that night, the commanding officer called a conference in the hut which served as his headquarters. He was eating his supper and talking with his officers as I entered the dim, candle-lighted room.
The enemy fire has subsided to the west. Oh, hello, Russell.
Hello, Captain. Commander.
Hello, Russell. I was just telling the captain that I agree with him that our advanced position here is untenable. Our lines are extended too thinly to cope with the force of the enemy. We must withdraw before he realizes the prize he's losing here.
No chance for reinforcement, eh?
And at present, none. But I wish to stress to all of you that this is not to be a general withdrawal. Our lines back of Tibuoba are strong and will hold.
How soon do we leave?
As quickly as we can organize a convoy. Captain, what do your patrols report of the road to the rear?
It's a rough dirt track, a side road, leading back toward Meshes El Bab. It appears to be the only way through the German ring.
I see. Does the enemy have it covered?
It was under fire from machine gun nest during the day. But our patrol reports it's comparatively quiet now.
I see. Needless to say, this is a dangerous task. We'll negotiate the distance. About 3 miles, isn't it, Captain?
About 3 miles, sir.
We'll negotiate that distance in complete blackout and in low gear. Take your time. If the noise of gunfire dies down enough to give us away, stop. We'll stay in close formation. You all know the rules of convoy driving. Any questions?
No, sir.
No, sir. The memory of that drive will stay with me always. Our trucks, automobiles, and Bren gun carriers crawled through the darkness, with everyone straining his eyes to see vehicles only a few feet in front. I drove at the start. But in a little over a mile, my eyes became so strained that I couldn't distinguish the outlines of the truck immediately in front of us. Stoneman drove the last half of the distance. Once during that tortuous drive, a single sniper's bullet whined out of the dark, barely missed our windshield. Well, we completed the 3 miles in something over 3 hours. By then, every man was exhausted from strain. It was raining. We threw ourselves down under an olive grove and slept. We didn't care about the cold and discomfort. Following morning at dawn, the press contingent set out for the nearby village of Wedzaga, where we learned we could file our rain-soaked dispatches at a field headquarters. From there, they could be relayed to London and New York.
Russell's dispatches gave the public his brilliant personal account of his experiences in one of the most fiercely fought engagements of the African campaign. And to the end of his story, Russell added this summation of his 73-hour visit to Stuka Acres.
I'm resting here at Wedzaga a couple of days till I can go back to Tibuoba with our reinforcements. But from here out, I'm working on borrowed time.
Ned Russell, whose story you have just heard, is one of hundreds of United Press correspondents who are facing danger, risking capture or death at the battlefronts around the world to report at first hand today's tremendous events. We will present another program in this series in the near future. Be sure to listen. And meanwhile, remember to listen for United Press News on the air. Look for United Press News in your favorite newspaper. It is your guarantee of the world's best coverage of the world's biggest news.